liberties. All glories to this of liberties. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Today is the most glorious, wonderful and joyful day, the anniversary of the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna within this material world, on this planet, to give us his mercy. So we will read some verses, a number of verses, from Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna, introduction, and we'll make some comments as we go. We'll begin with verse 17. Bhumir Driptan Ripa Vyaja Daitya Nikas Shatari Tai. Akranta Uri Bharena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayo. This is how Srila Prabhupada begins the Krishna book with this sentence, translation of this verse. Once, when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow, very much distressed, with tears in her eyes. She appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma, with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods, approached the shore of the ocean of milk. After reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master of the whole universe, the supreme God of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worship Lord Vishnu, who lies on the ocean of milk, by reciting the Vedic mantras known as Purusha Sukta. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, "O demigods, hear from me the order of Shiradakshai Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay." Lord Brahma informed the demigods, "Before we submitted our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, for as long as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burden by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. So, this is a nice verse, very nice verse. Vasudeva grihe sakshat Bhagavan purusha para janishyate tat priyantam sambhavantum surastriya. That in the house of Vasudeva grihe will appear sakshat Bhagavan Purusha Para, will appear that person who is directly Sakshat Bhagavan, directly, personally, that very person who, if anyone could be referred to or addressed as Bhagavan, it is him. Bhagavan literally means, Bhaga means opulence, and Van means one who possesses. So Bhagavan means he who possesses opulence, or ultimately he who possesses all opulence. Whatever opulences anyone may have, a little beauty, a little wealth, a little knowledge, a little strength, a little fame, a little renunciation, these are the six opulences. So, whatever we or anyone may possess of these opulences, or any one or two or some of them, we have it on loan from Lord Krishna, who is Sakshat Bhagavan, directly, personally, the actual Bhagavan, the one who actually possesses all the opulences himself. Some of us may have some money in our pockets or in our bank account. It is on loan from Krishna. And just like with any loan, it will be taken back. The latest will be at the end of this life, because in our next lives we'll be born with nothing. The latest will be at the end of this life, but in many cases it happens that Krishna decides to take it back before the end of the life, and one finds that one runs out of money. Or a little beauty. People may have a little beauty, so some other people find them a little attractive. But of course, the latest he'll take your beauty back is the time of death, and generally he starts gradually taking it back some years before the time of death. Miss World, Miss Chatsworth, by the time she's 60, what to speak of 70, what to speak of if she makes it to 80, oh, she wouldn't become Miss Chatsworth again. Anyway, so these things are on loan. Even renunciation, the least popular of the six opulences generally, even renunciation, everything's taken away at the time of death, like it or not. But Krishna is Sakshad Bhagavan Purusha Para. Occasionally we find in the verses in the Bhagavatam, and even There's at least one that I can think of, perhaps there's more. In the first couple of chapters, two or three chapters, which are describing in detail the events leading up to the appearance of Krishna and then the actual appearance of Krishna, you find that at least in one verse, and maybe more, that it is said that the Supreme Lord Vishnu appeared. Means Krishna. But they say the Supreme Lord Vishnu. We all know that within different circles in Hinduism, there is sometimes controversy. Who is supreme? Or who is, you could say, supremely supreme? Because there's supreme, more supreme, most supreme, even more supreme, and supremely supreme. Is it Vishnu? Is it Vishnu? Or is it Krishna? Of course, we advocate, we present strongly that it is Krishna, it is not exactly Vishnu in the most direct sense. But it is commonly held, as I'm sure many of you are aware, in different quarters in Hinduism, that Vishnu is the supreme, because Krishna is sometimes described as being one of the 10 avatars of Vishnu. Or in the third chapter of this, of the first canto, of the first canto, in the third chapter, there are some 20 odd different incarnations described, listed out and described, and Krishna is one of them. So some people think like that, that he must be just an incarnation of Vishnu, and Vishnu is superior, and Krishna is coming from him. But here Srila Bhagavatam, which is the supreme authority, the emperor of all evidences. This is how Jiva Goswami describes Srila Bhagavatam, the emperor of all evidences. There's so many literatures, including Vedic literatures, which are very good evidence for different things regarding the creation and life and like that. But Srimad Bhagavatam is the emperor, means the king of kings, of evidence, authoritative sources of knowledge. So, this is what Srimad Bhagavatam says here. Not that it's the only statement, there are many others, but it's making it very clear that Vasudeva Grihe Sakshad Bhagavan Purusha Param, that in the house of Vasudeva will appear that person who is directly, personally, the very Bhagavan, the one who is the ultimate possessor of all opulences, and from whom even other forms of himself have received whatever opulences or opulences they may have, and which of course vary from incarnation to incarnation and so many different forms of the Lord with different degrees of potency and particular characteristics of the Lord being displayed. But Krishna is Sakshad Bhagavan Purusha Param. He is not, so to speak, just Lord Vishnu. Just Lord Vishnu. Of course, to be just Lord Vishnu is extremely high by our standards, but Krishna is higher. So this is what is being described here, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the supreme possessor of all opulences, who has full potency, and is the ultimate Purusha Vara, transcendental supreme person, he will appear as the son of Vasudeva and thereby become known as Vasudeva. From Vasudeva comes Vasudeva with a long first A. So, let us continue. The foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarsana, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarsana will appear as Baladeva, just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. Well, of course, exactly 1 week ago we celebrated a wonderful festival for the appearance of Lord Balaram, Lord Baladeva. And this is who is being described here. And we mentioned that Jiva Goswami makes the point that if someone asks Krishna, who is God? Krishna says, me. But if you ask Lord Balaram, who is God? Lord Balaram says, Krishna. He is in a different mood, a somewhat different mood, the mood of the devotee. And therefore, as described in this verse, and a little more will be said shortly in some of the other verses, that first of all, Lord Balaram, about a week before Lord Krishna appeared, Lord Balaram appeared, but actually some weeks or months before that, Lord Balaram entered the womb of Devaki. And then, after some weeks or months, he was transferred from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. It appeared to be a miscarriage for Devaki, but actually it was a great transcendental transfer. Yes. You know, nowadays the biggest killer of human beings is abortion, more than war, more than old age, more than cancer, more than heart disease or whatever else. The greatest killer of human beings is abortion. But there are also many families who somehow or other they cannot have children, so they adopt, or they just even sometimes they stay without children. But imagine if they could do like this. A special transfer from a mother who doesn't want the child to a mother who does. That would be nice. So this is what happened here. Lord Balaram, first of all, was in the womb of Devaki, but then he was transferred to the womb of Rohini, who is actually his eternal mother. Devaki is not the eternal mother of Lord Balaram, but Mother Rohini is. So, of course, the question can arise, it's a good question, why not just go straight into the womb of Rohini? Why, first of all, go into the womb of Devaki and then be transferred, and it appears to be a miscarriage and, you know, very traumatic in many ways for many people. But Srila Prabhupada explains in one of the purports a little further on that the reason the Lord Byron first hole entered the womb of David King and was then transferred and just did not just go straight into the womb of Rohini, and it would have been very simple, relatively speaking, was that Lord Balaram wanted to prepare the womb of David King so that Lord Krishna could come and be very comfortable and happy and make sure that everything was working properly and so on and so forth. Therefore he came into the womb of Devaki first and then went to his, you could say, natural mother. So this is all Lord Balaram in the mood of the devotee. And as the verse says, that he will appear as Baladev just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes, to enhance the pastimes and add some wonderful transcendental elements to the pastimes, all for the pleasure of Krishna. This is the business of the devotee. So let us continue. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. Shiva Goswami continued, after thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, the very powerful Lord Brahma, who is the master of all other Prajapatis and is therefore known as Prajapati Pati, returned to his own abode, Brahma Loka. So that is now setting the scene. Just the initial happenings on a cosmic level, how the Lord appeared, that there were many demons at that time. There were many demons who somehow or other they gained political control of the whole planet. And naturally they were disrupting Dharma, Krishna consciousness, and the lives of pious people. And what does Krishna say in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Parichraya sadhunam vinashaya duskritam dharma samstapanarataya sampadami yuge yuge. The Lord says that I appear in order to deliver or protect the devotees and the pious people, to annihilate the miscreants, and dharma samstapanartaya, to re-establish the principles of religion. For these reasons I appear millennium after millennium. So there were all these demons, as we read right at the beginning, and they had gathered armies, and they were fighting with each other and challenging each other, and from time to time declaring war on each other and bashing each other, as is the wont of certain types of kshatriyas. Or people who are really sutras, they also become like that, very antagonistic and aggressive. So they were creating so many problems, gathering together great military phalanxes and just marching them up and down, and sometimes fighting with each other. And when they weren't fighting, then they were marching them up and down. And this was disturbing Mother Earth, because the planet, in one sense, is at least experienced by Bhumi Devi, Mother Earth. The planet she experiences as her body. Therefore, it's described that when Lord Krishna was having his pastimes 5,000 years ago, he would go out with the cows every day, and many cows, big heavy cows with hard hooves and sharp hooves sometimes. So the description is, the cows would go walking out through the fields, these big heavy creatures, and Mother Earth felt their weight and their hooves. It hurt her. It actually hurt her. It caused pain to Mother Earth. But Lord Krishna would walk behind, and his lotus feet would soothe Mother Earth. So that was fun. That was nice. But all these demons with their armies and marching them up and down, etc., it was simply a disturbance, just showing off. When I was a child, I was taught a nursery rhyme, a good old British nursery rhyme. I don't know if you learned it. The grand old Duke of York, he had 10,000 men, and he marched them up to the top of the hill, and then he marched them down again. And when he was up, he was up. And when he was down, he was down. And when he was only halfway up, he was neither up nor down. I don't know if there's more to it than that. That's what I heard when I was a small child. Jack and Jill and various other things. So this is just typical. You just get your army together and just march it around to impress people. So people respect you and feel frightened of you, and then you can assert yourself with them and tax them or whatever. So this is what was going on. And it was very painful for Mother Earth, to the point that she just couldn't tolerate it. Mother Earth tolerates a lot. You know, she's tolerating having different mines and oil wells drilled into her body, as we know today. But somehow she's tolerating it, at least to some degree. Bali Maharaj makes the point in the 8th canto that Mother Earth is extremely tolerant, but she cannot tolerate a liar. A liar, a dishonest, untruthful person. Mother, she can tolerate so many people doing so many abusive things, but not a liar. Anyway, we can remember that. So here we have just the basic introduction that Mother Earth went to Lord Brahma. She cannot approach the Lord herself, only through Brahma, who's the superior, supreme demigod within the universe. Even Lord Shiva, well, Lord Shiva is one of the sons of Lord Brahma, even though he's often regarded as being more powerful. But still, Lord Brahma, in a certain sense, is in a senior position. So all the demigods and great sages and others, they gathered together, went to the banks of the milk ocean, and offered the Purusha Sukta prayers. Then Lord Brahma went into meditation, and there was an actual communication between Shivadakshai Vishnu, the Lord who lies on that ocean of Kheer, of milk, and Lord Brahma through the heart. Here, of course, we're familiar with the ocean of salt water, and lakes are there. They're oceans of fresh water, unsalted water. But there are other oceans too. For the demons, there's an ocean of liquor. I don't know which liquor. Maybe mainstay. Or for the Russians, maybe vodka. But anyway, it's an ocean of liquor. And then there's an ocean of honey, an ocean of ghee. It's amazing. Imagine surfing in an ocean of honey. You know, when I first read this, I mean, really way back then, I actually thought about that. But there's also an ocean of milk. And surfing is not so much fun. I can vouch for that. Prabhupada saw people surfing in Hawaii. And he said, "Who are they?" And the lady said, "They're surfers, Srila Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "What?" "They're surfers, Srila Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "Oh, sea sufferers." And the devotee thought that Prabhupada just misheard. And he said, "No, Prabhupada, surfers." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, I see, sea sufferers." I can confirm it's true. So there's all these different oceans, and there's an ocean of milk. And Lord Vishnu, who of course appreciates milk and milk products, as we know very well, he lives on Sweetadweep Island. At least there are different Sweetadweeps actually. But it is one within this universe, in the middle of the North Ocean. So Lord Brahma presented the prayers, the desires, the problems that were being faced. And Lord Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, informed him that Lord Krishna is going to appear. And he will right all the wrongs and bring everything back into order. So Lord Brahma is just informed the demigods of that. And now let us move on to the next part of the whole description, very important. What happened with Devaki, Kamsa, and Vasudeva on the wedding day of Vasudeva and Devaki? Formerly, Shurasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Shurasena. Since that time, the city of Mathura had been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Krishna lives there eternally. He's there today. Of course, Mathura has become a sort of us. It's a city. You know, some areas are somewhat modern. But certainly people have gravitated there to earn money, really. And so many different types of people who don't really fit in to a place like Mathura. They also reside there. There's a big Muslim community. And there's a big slaughterhouse. And there's at least one McDonald's. So, welcome to Kali Yuga. It is really just a terrible shame. Terrible, terrible shame. But still, on the transcendental platform, it is that sacred place which is the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some time ago, Vasudev, who belonged to the demigod family or to the Shura dynasty, married Devaki. After the marriage, he mounted his chariot to return home with his newly married wife. Yes. Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. Shishi Radha Radhanan King. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu King. Shri Giri Govardhan King. Shri Krishna Janmasthami King. He was surrounded by hundreds of golden chariots. He's described here that as Swasu Priya, that Devaki is Swasu Priya, his dear sister of Kamsa. Actually, they're not exactly brother and sister, as the terms are commonly applied in the Western world. They're cousin brother and cousin sister. They're not directly biological brother and sister as such, but Vedic culture, of course, in Vedic culture, there's the broader concept of what is a family and who may be your brother or your sister, as is current in Hindu society, at least in many places still. And uncles and aunts, even when I was brought up in Western culture, all my parents' friends were uncles and aunts. I had many uncle this one and auntie that one. So many. So this is the warm nature, at least, particularly in Vedic society, the very warm, close nature of families. So, by Western standards, she was his cousin, sister, but still, somehow they had some sort of close relationship, and therefore he volunteered to drive them home to the house of Vasudev, just when the wedding ceremony and all the different functions connected with it, just as soon as they had finished. Devaki's father, King Devaka, was very much affectionate to his daughter. Therefore, while she and her husband were leaving home, he gave her a dowry of 400 elephants nicely decorated with golden garlands. He also gave 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maid servants, fully decorated with ornaments. This is the Vedic system. Of course, we hear how in India nowadays it's abused in so many ways. And I was walking through a street in Vrindavan a couple of years ago, and there was some graffiti on the wall. And it said, I can't remember the exact terms, in Hindi, dowry narak hai. Dowry is hell. Dowry is hell, because so many of the young girls become abused, and their parents become abused by the husband and his families wanting dowry, some money, some serious money. Otherwise, we will not let our son marry your daughter. But this, King David came. He was, you know, like a secondary king. He's not one of the big leading kings like the Kuru dynasty, like Kamsa even. But still, even though he's like a minor king, so opulent, he had so many elephants that he gave of 400. And he must have kept many. There's some temples in India which keep elephants, including, of course, our temple in Mayapur. But it's very costly to keep elephants. To really look after elephants costs thousands and thousands of dollars every year. Tens of thousands, at least. So he was so opulent, he could give away 400 and so many other things. 400 elephants decorated with golden garlands. Not what? Like they say, silk flower garlands. Right? Silk flower garlands. Which you can reuse next wedding. You can reuse it and say, honey. Anyway, so extremely opulent. Natural opulence, because even though there was no real industrialization, but because they were living actually to the plan of the Lord, Daini Varanashram, Krishna conscious Varanashram social structure, and because they were living an agrarian way of life, they were just so opulent. Like you can see Krishna up there over the front doors. Krishna, little Krishna, he just crawled and knocked down the twin Arjuna trees, you see. And there's the grinding water behind him and the two demigods, Navakumbra and Manigriva. And just look and see at the jewelry Krishna's wearing. Look at that. And it's real. And you know, he's just a little child. And as we know, in that Devadatta Lila, he was really being an irresponsible little child. And nowadays, parents would not put valuable jewelry on their irresponsible little child, who may just lose it, break it, give it, or something. But Vedic culture was just so rich, including materially, opulently, that even it was normal for a little child like Krishna to wear golden jewels. Oh, beloved son, Maharaj Parikshit, when the bride and bridegroom were ready to start, conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrated in concert for their auspicious departure. While Kamsa, ladies, no one's falling asleep, are they? We could do an exercise if they were. Listen to this now, this is important. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. You foolish rascal! The eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. Holy Krishna. So, yeah, the eighth child. Ashtama Garba. The child who comes from the eighth pregnancy will kill you. Come, sir. Was a condemned personality in the Bhoja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand, and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Talk about, I don't know if you would say bipolar, but emotionally unstable. One moment, yes, we're celebrating. And I'm like, your brother, let me drive you to your husband's house. Yes, as your brother, out of affection. And next moment, let me grab you by your hair, pull your hair back so I get a good shot. And let me cut your head off. Shoo. Anyway, people, the more people are on the material platform, the more they become unstable. And they fluctuate from this to that, happiness to distress. The more they're on the material platform, people become ultimately untrustworthy, actually. They can say one thing, they can even make a promise, and then the next day break it, or the next minute break it, if somehow they get the idea that it will be unfaithful for them. And even in the 8th canto, again, we mentioned Bali Maharaj. When Bali Maharaj gave or agreed that Lord Varman could have 3 sets of land, and Lord Varman was just about to take them, then Shukracharya, his spiritual master or priest, objected. He understood, wait a minute, this is Vishnu, and he's going to do something here to fool us and trick us and rob us on the basis of these 3 sets of land, this promise. Okay, you're going to have 3 sets of land. So Shukracharya then explained to Bali Maharaj different circumstances under which, according to him, it's okay to break a promise. Like, for example, if when you give a promise, when you make a promise, if you do not say Om before you pronounce the promise, you don't have to keep the promise. Sorry, I didn't say Om, it's okay. If you are going to lose money or some material assets, if you keep your promise, then it's all right to break your promise. It's acceptable. And it's not really true. It's not really true. So anyway, people make promises, break promises. This is Kali Yuga. It's a shame. So then, Vasudeva, the husband, they just finished the wedding ceremony, so he's just become a husband. He responded in very amazing ways. Wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul, Vasudev, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. Just listen, it's amazing how different a person Vasudev is from Kamsa. Vasudev said, my dear brother-in-law Kamsa, my dear brother-in-law is just about to cut the head off mine. Why? Anyway, he is very stable, and because he's stable, he's able to think clearly, even in difficult circumstances. Like we said, the more people get onto the material platform, the more they become unstable. But as a person becomes more transcendental, more advanced in Krishna consciousness, then the more they are able to not be affected by difficult situations. And of course, we know that Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, the soul within the body is undergoing the different changes of body during the course of the life without being disturbed. But a spiritually advanced person, even when the time of death comes, then dearest tatra na muyati, the sober person, and this ultimately means the advanced devotee who's the most sober person, is not affected, does not lament or react in any type of way, really, to the death of the material body. Or for that matter, other situations which would be disturbing to so many people. You know, sometimes there's this caricature of women. That women are people who, if they see a mouse, they scream. Did you know that? This is what they say. So the Vasudev, he was cool, calm, and collected completely. So he doesn't just scream out, "Stop! Don't do it! Please!" or something like that, or just cry and faint. But in a very astute, clever way, he says, "My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the pride of the family." Actually, he's the, as they say, the black sheep. He's like the black sheep to end all black sheep of the family. Sure, just horrific, fantastically horrible person. But Vasudev, he is thinking how to address this situation to save the day. You are the pride of your family, the Moja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. Sure, I don't know which heroes, but that's what he's saying. How could such a qualified person as you, qualified as a first-class demon, kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage or on any occasion? Oh, great hero! One who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. So basically what he does, he preaches, in his own words, he preaches Bhagavad Gita to Kamsa. And he tries, using different, very nice examples. Here's one. There's a whole series of verses, we won't read them all, but this is one. Just as a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. That's interesting, isn't it? This is not even the Gita, but it's a, you know, like a, an interesting perspective on the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. The conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the previous body. Not that we give up the current body and then we take shelter of the next body. No, first of all we take shelter of the next body and then we give up the current body. You might think that how could it be like that, but the point is that in the course of this life we are developing our next bodies, and by the time you get to the time of death, or even sort of approaching the time of death, your next body you've already accepted in principle, because your consciousness is such that you're going to get a certain particular body. It's already fixed. It's already fixed. Even some time before this body dies. Because taking a particular body in your next body, in your next lifetime, is not just a matter when the time of death comes or is coming and you realize, whoops, half an hour to go. Oh well, what should I do? I know, I'll think of Krishna. And then you think of Krishna and you die. It doesn't quite work like that. It depends how you've lived and the whole state of mind you've developed through the course of your life. And by the time you get to the late stages of your life, you know what they say, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. People get set in their ways. It's very true. So, by the time a person becomes old, and the time of death is just looming up on the horizon, they've already developed the consciousness through which they're going to get their next body, and it's not going to change. Some last minute change of consciousness. It's not going to happen. So this is why Vasudeva says here very cleverly, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. So it goes on like that, preaching to Tecumseh. But, you know, Kamsa, particularly under any circumstances, and particularly under these circumstances, is not a very good candidate for being preached to. Some people have more potential for responding to Krishna conscious preaching than others. And, you know, those who are preachers, regularly preaching to non-devotees, well, they have so much experience of that. So much experience. So Kamsa, unfortunately, was not a good candidate for being preached to under any circumstances, and particularly these circumstances. Anyway, Vasudeva tries his best. The last thing he says here is, therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should you act impiously? Considering your own welfare, you should not envy anyone. For an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. You know, I read a while ago, not so long, but a while ago, about the famous Indian character of, what, like 20, 30 years ago? Poolan Devi. Did you ever hear of Poolan Devi? The gangster. Heavy, 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 Gates of wow. Anyway, we're not going to go through the whole story, but it's a real chunk. It's like the underside of India, you know, nice pious Bharat, Hare Krishna, Namaste, and all that. There's an underside, and she was one of the leaders of the underside. So, but, you know, it's a long story, but because it's Kali Yuga, and because Kali Yuga is crazy, totally crazy, for being a terrible killer and criminal, I mean, just outrageous, completely, completely. Next thing was, she was given a pardon by the government, and she became a member of parliament. Jai Bharatvata. I tell you what. Good sense. Well, you know, it's just hard to imagine how it could be. But because she had lived such an envious, incredibly envious, impious life, through which she got karma and plenty of enemies, when she was a member of parliament living in her Lani house in Delhi, special MP's house, some of her old enemies came and killed her. Yeah. She ran her out and she took her in half a she gave me over the time. Okay. So anyway, Vasudeva is trying the last tactic. His last tactic at this point. That don't kill her, because if you do, it will be bad for you. Yeah, it's going to be bad for you. Therefore, you shouldn't have killed her. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel and was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. Therefore, he could be neither pacified nor terrified by the good instructions given by Vasudeva. He did not care about the results of sinful activities, either in this life or in the next. As we said, he was not a good candidate for being preached to. At any time, and particularly this time, when there's this type of a threat against his life. So Vasudeva tried another approach. Vasudeva thought to himself, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth, or, since he's already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons, so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, or something else happens, you know, oops, anything could happen practically. As soon as you start getting voices speaking from the sky, you must know anything can happen. So, okay, let us deal with the immediate threat rather than trying to get completely let off and just have Kamsa say, okay, no problem, let's forget about it. At least let's deal with the immediate threat. And then if in due course Kamsa dies or something else happens, I shall have nothing to fear. So this is what he did. Vasudeva made a proposal to Kamsa. Vasudeva's mind was full of anxiety, because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. So basically, anyway, let me read the next verse. That's what they've said. O best of the sober! Hare Krishna. And you know, it's interesting that Kamsa, who's not, you know, on a material level, he's not foolish, Kamsa didn't think, wait a minute, why is he telling me I'm so nice and so dear? And I'm the best of the sober when I'm acting in crazy ways. He is pulling my leg. He is being diplomatic. But anyway, Kamsa didn't think like that. Oh, best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki. Why kill her? Because of what you've heard from the unseen omen, the cause of death will be her sons. Therefore I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all unto your hands. So Kamsa accepted. And one of the main reasons he accepted was because he knew that Vasudeva was honest, very like, just honest to a T, painstakingly honest. Otherwise, so many people, if they said something like that, you know, the next you'd hear from them, you'd get some sort of an email from the other side of the world because they would have made an escape. But no, not Vasudev. He said, I'll give you all of our sons. And Kamsa understood, yes, he'll do it. And what's the point of killing Devaki? She can't hurt me. So let her live. So like this, Kamsa then spared the life of Devaki, and I don't know if he just took the reins up and continued driving to the house or what happened, but anyway, that was sort of the end of that for the time being, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So then, every year in due course, Devaki gave birth to a child. She had 8 sons, one after the other, and a daughter named Subhadra. Subhadra is the daughter of Devaki. So of course, well, Lord Balaram was the 7th son, and he appeared to be a miscarriage. He became the son of Rohini. But there were 6 sons who died. Well, died. Were handed over to Kamsa, and Kamsa killed them. The story behind that, which Prabhupada explains in one of the purports, is that Kamsa in his previous life was Kala Naini. Kala Naini was the brother, one of the brothers of Prahlad Maharaj. He was one of the sons of Hiranyakashipu, and he had 6 sons, Kala Naini. But he was a son of Hiranyakashipu. And, you know, Prahlad, of course, as we know, was a great, great devotee. But Kala Naini, he was following in the footsteps more of his father, Hiranyakashipu. And his sons, 6 sons, they prayed to Lord Brahma. Just as Hiranyakashipu prayed to Lord Brahma eventually. So, the sons prayed to Lord Brahma that we not be killed in this way or that way or any way, all the ways they could think of. hoping to become immortal, and Lord Brahma agreed to each request. So then Hiranyakashipu heard about it and became very upset that, oh, you're taking shelter of someone other than me. You think there's someone who can help you more than me? Well, I curse you. He said, in your next lives, you'll be the six sons of Devaki, you'll all be killed by your father. Kalamani, your dear father, who will become Kamsa. So this is what happened. The first six children, sons, were killed by Kamsa. Seventh was apparently a miscarriage, but was Lord Balaram. And then Krishna appeared as the eighth son. And then when they were released, after Krishna had appeared, then Subhadra was born when Devaki was released from jail. So let us just conclude for the time being with a very nice verse. 10th Canto, chapter 1, text 58. Kim dusaham nusadhumam vidusham kim apechatam kim akaryam kadaryanam dustyajam kim kritatanam. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? Nothing's painful. Nothing's painful. Because they know it's the truth. So it's good. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How can there not be independence from pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? You know, this sort of encapsulates the positions of these different types of people. For people who are extremely pious, extremely suffering, if something is true, it is to be embraced wholeheartedly, even if apparently it may or may not be favorable by ordinary material standards. And for the pure devotees, they're completely independent of the material nature. Completely independent. Happiness, distress, sickness, death, gaining material things, losing material things, it all makes no difference. They're independent of what happens on the material level, because they're completely sheltered by Krishna and they're completely secure in the shelter of Krishna. But what deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? Is it forbidden for them to kill even children, even their sister? No. It's good. It's fine. Not forbidden. At least that's how they see things. I can do it. Kill a child, just, you know, half an hour after the child has come out of the womb, no problem. It's good. Not forbidden at all. It's good. It should be done. If it's favorable for me, for my program and my goals in life. And cheating people, lying, and anything. What is forbidden for people of the lowest character? Nothing at all. At least as far as they're concerned. They can do what they like. Of course, they have to take their karma, but, you know, that doesn't really figure into the equation so much for them. And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who are fully surrendered at his lotus feet. So therefore, Vasudeva was able to give up the children. Kamsa was able to kill the children. And then finally, the eighth child, Devaki became pregnant for the eighth time. For the eighth time, Kamsa had been locked up, and they gave birth in captivity, at least to most of the children, not all of them. I think the first child was born out of captivity. So then Kamsa, knowing the eighth child is coming now, Kamsa became anxious. And Kamsa, he became absorbed in thinking what to do, how to avoid being killed, just thinking, you know, when people get into anxiety, they sort of overthink situations. So he was just thinking of Krishna. When will the eighth child get me? Will it get me in this way, in that way, in some way, in some place, at some time? And Kamsa attained, you could say, an altered state of consciousness. He would look in the mirror and see nothing. You would look in the mirror and not see his face. Which may be good, actually. I've mentioned before, you may have heard, when I first joined, there was only one mirror in the Brahmacharya ashram, which was two or three rooms, or four. There was one mirror. It was that size. Seriously, just big enough to see, you know, how you put on your tilak. And over the top was the sign, "Mirror is Maya." I don't think you have ever been mirrors, do you? But in many ways it's true. Anyway, that's another thing. But Kamsa would look in the mirror and not see anything. And he tried to sleep at night, but he's always just thinking of Krishna. Is he going to get me in this way, that way, or, you know, some time, some place? And he got totally obsessed, and he could not sleep, because he was just thinking, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And he told himself, stop it. And then a few seconds later, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And for days and weeks before Krishna actually appeared, he was in this condition, like kind of somewhat insane. And he couldn't forget Krishna. He was trying and trying to forget Krishna, he couldn't. Narada Muni later, well no, this is the 10th canto, in the 7th canto, Narada Muni, when Krishna has killed Shishupal, Narada Muni talks about how Shishupal was so focused on Krishna. He never forgot Krishna, although it was in a mood of hatred. And he talks about Kamsa. He also, at least in the last stages, he could not forget Krishna. He tried, he could not. Whereas on the other hand, you have the gopis, the pandavas, they're great devotees and they're always remembering Krishna. But Narada Muni makes the point that I think how strongly Kamsa and Shishupal were remembering Krishna. I think they were remembering Krishna more than me. and he's the great, great pure devotee there at Avunya. I think they were remembering the Lord more than me. This is not to suggest that if you're having trouble keeping up with your grounds and maintaining the principles, and you know, sometimes some devotee does something a little funny. Not funny, haha, either. But something, and you become affected by it, and you get disturbed in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean that we should now follow the footsteps of Kamsa and Shishupa and just try and focus our minds on Krishna in the mood of hatred. That will not work, because Krishna can only really be approached through love in devotional service. But Kamsa was always remembering Krishna. It was amazing. And we should also try to always remember Krishna. Not in the same way as him, but in the mood of service, chanting his holy names, appreciating him by studying scripture and learning his qualities, his pastimes, his instructions, and really try and focus on Krishna very nicely. And that's what this Janmashtami day is for. You know, I cannot remember, maybe there has been, but I cannot remember offhand a Janmashtami on a Sunday. At least I can't. Maybe there have been, you know, I mean, in the last so many years I've been involved. But today is also Sunday. Normally on Janmashtami, I tell the devotees that you can take the day off work. You have permission. You can take sick leave. Tell them you're sick of working. But today we don't have to do that. Today, I mean, you know, any person who has a sensible job at least has the day off. So look, you see, what an opportunity we have. Please make the most of today. And don't just go home and sort of conk out and come back for the evening program. But stay on. Stay on. And chant more. You know, we're already chanting for a couple of hours. Well done. And it did not turn into a, what would you say, a talkathon or chatathon, as these occasions sometimes do, that you just get so many devotees sitting on the benches usually and chatting. Although I noticed a few, I must say. When you're addicted, it's tough. But congratulations to most of you, because you really got into it, though. It was very nice. Well done. So stay on and chant more, read more, have some kirtan, do some service, help with preparing the prasadam, help with, you know, whatever else. There's so many things to be done. And really absorb yourself in Krishna Janmashtami, in the mood, in the activities, and it will enrich you so much spiritually. It will enrich you so much. By the time you go away later on this evening, you will have been transformed to a noticeable extent, for sure, if you really apply yourselves and make the most of it. So I'll finish here, but just a very, very, very nice thing. As you all go out, you see just in front of the door, a few meters in front, there's Bhaktin Sanyali. You see? There she is, she's waving at you. Very friendly and nice. with the table there and your book. This is where you can place your orders for the Go The Damn book. It's another nice thing to do on Shabbos. And you will get the discount, as we mentioned. She will take all your names and contact details, phone number, etc. And the book will be here. It's already printed. It is being bound, being put together. And then it will be shipped, within a week, I'd say, or maximum 2 weeks. So it should be here, I would say, within 6 weeks plus or minus. Yeah. At the latest for Go The Damn Puja, it'll be here before Go The Damn Puja, for sure. So on your way out, please give your details there, and please have a very wonderful Krishna Janmashtami. Shri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsavati.
Hare Krishna, thank you to the Holy Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj. I was thinking as I was speaking that if you came up for us hosting so many thousands of guests that we are today, we will ask you to please continue this wonderful Gathan. And as Mark said, we want to echo that. Please don't go home and stay with us. It's such a wonderful hearing and chatting together, and such a wonderful service to be done. And we look forward to all the wonderful association. Late in the evening at around 10:30 or so, Maharaj will continue with the second installment, possibly at the same theme going on in our show. So please come and stay tuned, and they will be able to the wonderful act of Krishna consciousness. As we are preparing for all the guests to come and offer their personal worship to Radharani, we request that some of the devotees please help clear the chairs and ease up the temple as soon as you possibly can, so that may facilitate the next part of the program. Thank you. Very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.